Okay, well, we might make a start now for the final session for the conference. In this presentation, I want to talk a bit about some templates for effective e-teaching strategies, you know, essentially good activities you could run with your students. And I'm going to use three examples: predict, observe, explain, problem-based learning, and role play. So those are the three examples I'll come to as we go along, and I'll say a bit about them when I get to them. But before I do, just in terms of things I'll do, some quick thank yous and a brief mention about mobile LAMs, and then I'll come to a bit of the backgrounds on this book that we've just handed around and these strategies. So that's where I'm headed in the presentation. I should also say I've got a bit of a cold at the moment, so my apologies if I'm a little bit thick in the head. So before I go any further, firstly, some thank yous. I'd really like to thank Daniel Tan and Chun-Tek Ong and all the colleagues at NTU who've done such a fantastic job of helping to support this conference and make it possible. This is the first time we've done a conference in the Asia-Pacific area, and we're really delighted at how well it's gone and how many people have come. So our thanks to that. Thank you also to Eva and to Daniel for their keynotes. Leanne Cameron over here has been absolutely tireless in making this conference. Is it wave? So if there's anything good about this conference, please thank Leanne because she has done such an amazing job. Also my colleague Renee Vance, who's not here but has been doing a lot of the organization from Sydney, has also done a fantastic job. I'd also like to thank Ernie and all the guys from the technical team who do such a great job on LAMs. And, you know, there's so many things that we're working on, and I'll show you one of those in a second. And finally, just to thank all of you who've been a part of this conference, to all the presenters who've given presentations, it's been great, and all of you for participating. It makes for a great event coming together. And finally, my wife Bronwyn, some of you may have seen her speak earlier on medical education, and my children Zoe and Sebastian. You may have even seen them around the food area. There's a little blonde one. That's Sebastian, my son. I don't know where the blonde hair came from, but anyway, it's lovely. All right, so just before I get into the talk proper, I always like to say something about where LAMS development is up to and any new things that are coming when I give these keynote presentations. And so I want to just very briefly show you. A few of you saw this in an earlier session when Ernie was speaking, but for those who didn't see it, I want to just point out I mean, there are many things we're working on in LAMS, and there are many areas of feedback where we can do things to improve it, and we're always very keen to receive, you know, any suggestions of what we can do. And as I think most of you know, we're an open-source project, so we don't have millions of dollars lying around to do, you know, any type of development, but we do whatever we can within our modest resources to keep adding to LAMS and, you know, make it better and better. But one of the messages we've got very strongly in about the last 12 months is the importance of mobile learning and mobile devices. Many people are keen to see that as part of what they do in their work. And LAMS, in many ways, is ideal for mobile environments because it's very good at doing synchronous things. You know, you can actually do a live lecture with a couple of activities on LAMS that you could do with students if they could do it on their iPad or iPhone or whatever. So I just want to show you some work that Ernie is doing, and I can't take any credit for this. This is all Ernie and the technical team. But looking at doing some redevelopment of LAMS so that we can get it to run on small screens. So what you're looking at there is a special cut-down version of LAMS to run on an iPhone screen where the forum tool, which would normally take up, you know, a big screen, what we're doing is that LAMS can actually detect when it's on a small device, and it will reformat itself to suit the small device. So that's something we're working on now, and I won't sort of go into any great deal, but if I go into, say, topic, here I've got, you know, an example of a threaded discussion list, and I can post a message. And you'll notice it's got the style of sort of the small devices as a part of it there. There's my little comment there. And so what we've been trying to do is look at it won't be all of the LAMS tools because there are some LAMS tools that just wouldn't make sense on the small device. You know, something like Mind Map. You can't really get a mind map to fit on a little tiny screen. But for some of the key tools of LAMS, you know, for me, it would probably be things like notice board, Q&A, voting, forum. Just for a handful of those, we're looking at doing some redevelopment so they would run well on a small device. So that's something we're working on now that we haven't finished that work. It'll probably take us, I think, from 3 to 6 months before it's ready to go out. But I want to let everyone know that it's on our minds. We've already been working on it, and we hope to see that come out soon. That will be part of the general open source LAMS release. So if you use LAMS you know, once it comes out, the next time your LAMB server gets updated, you'll just get these features automatically as part of it. And one of the things we've done already based on that, and this has only just come out very recently, I don't think it would be out most of these, but LAMBs can detect when you're on the device that doesn't run Flash, like the iPhone, and it can switch to a learner version that doesn't need Flash to run. You know the little progress bar that runs down the side? That bit is Flash, whereas the main learner part is not Flash. So we've actually got an alternate version of the progress bar that doesn't require Flash to run. So we've just done that only recently, and so we'll add a few more features like that where LAMBs will become sort of a bit clever about what kind of device someone is using to access it and then adjust itself to make it a bit better to suit that device. That'll be just for learners. We won't be doing authoring on an iPhone. That would be a bit beyond us, particularly given that it uses Flash so extensively. But certainly for learners to be able to do activities on their phone or on an iPad in the classroom, that's something we're definitely working on. So, haven't done it yet, but it's coming. All right. So, if I can go into the talk I want to give today, we've talked a lot within this conference about LAMBs, and a number of people have given some great presentations about things they've done with LAMBs and particular features, and also a number of people provided some good feedback on things they'd like to see improved in LAMBs, features that, you know, could be made better and so on. All of that is very important and very valuable. But for me, the LAMB software itself was only ever sort of half of the vision of this whole area, this area that's normally called learning design. Because although we needed a new kind of software and it would do the sequencing of activities and it might have collaborative tools like the Q&A that are great at getting feedback from students, all those things are all very good and important. But there was a second thing that I and others always wanted from this area of work was that you could share the good sequences you built with other teachers. So that if I or any one of you built a great set of activities, that would become something you could share with others. And when I say sharing for this, and I've been using the phrase e-teaching strategies lately for this, because I want to draw attention to when you share one of these sequences, it really is something about e-teaching. I mean, the ultimate goal is that the students will learn and they'll learn with technology, but the thing you're sharing with a colleague is actually about teaching online. It's a set of activities to help do that teaching. So I think we can use the phrase e-teaching in a meaningful way to describe that. And for me, an e-teaching strategy is where you've got a certain plan or structure to the way you've put those together. It might be the De Bono sequences that Eva mentioned earlier today. It could be other examples where you've got a particular type of teaching approach or pedagogical approach that you've got in mind. So these we can think of as e-teaching strategies. But the difference between what LAMBs and other systems in learning design do as compared to general learning management systems or other things is that the thing you share, you should be able to pick up and run immediately in the software, and it should all kind of magically happen for you. To me, if I was to give you a Word document with a whole bunch of instructions that said, go into your Blackboard course, add a forum, and in the forum type in, discuss your ideas about climate change here, then go into the quiz area and add a quiz, and for question one, type in. If that was what we meant by sharing good e-teaching ideas, I mean, that's not a bad thing, but it's nowhere near as exciting or as easy to use. If I could just give you a file, and I said, run this file, and it will do all of that for you. It'll set up the forum. It'll put in the question in the forum. It'll set up the quiz. It'll configure the quiz. And so that, for me, is the goal of the sharing of learning designs, that we could share with each other as teachers and instructors good ways of teaching that we could quickly pick up and use and adapt. So as I say, it's been, you know, exciting building, you know, new software with new features like LAMBs, but for me it was only ever half the goal. The other half was this idea that we could share good teaching ideas with each other. So if we can hold that thought for a moment, because I'll come back to that with my examples in a moment, but I want to just mention another thing, and that is even if we had, you know, the software, even if we had the sharing of these teaching ideas, it doesn't mean that then lots of people would actually do it. And we've been looking at some feedback for the last 2 years about people who've used the LAMBs community, this website we have where people share these LAMBs sequences within it. And a number of people said that, you know, it's not that it's terrible to use or difficult. It's all right, but it isn't incredibly easy. And they wanted it to be very easy to look at someone else's sequence and to work out whether it would be useful for them in their own teaching. And so, you know, things like that you just had to click too many times to get to look at someone else's sequence, or that you had to create an account before you could go and view, you know, a preview of someone else's work. You know, these things, I mean, if you're the dedicated user, you'll go and do it, and there's people who do and they get value from it. But for the broader range of teachers where you would want to be able to say to them, look, here's a great sequence of activities you might try in your teaching. Why not have a look at it to see if it would be interesting? You would want that to be as quick as possible. You know, click one button for that teacher to see that example and then decide whether they want to learn more. That was one of the goals we had. We also found that for people who didn't have access to a LAMM server, so in the case of NTU and SP, where you've got your own LAMM server, this isn't so much a problem. But perhaps people who are in schools or in a university or somewhere where they didn't have access to LAMMs, it was quite painful to try and get and try something on LAMMs. You had to go to your tech people, you had to ask them to go and download this software, they had to install that software on the server and then give you an account with a password, and then you could finally get in and do it. Now, none of that was, you know, dreadful. A technical person could typically do that job in about 20 minutes if they sat down and just followed the instructions. It wasn't that it was possible, but you had to find the technical person. You had to persuade them to stop playing whatever 3D shooter they were currently playing and then install your software, you know, whatever it was, just all the kind of small barriers that make things difficult. And so what we thought was, what if we could put a version of LAMMs on the internet that's just there and running that people could go and use for trials, and you could just sign up, get a quick account for, say, up to 30 students and just give it a go without having to ask any tech person to set it up, without paying any money, and you could just get up and running. So these were two things that we thought we wanted to also make easier to foster this general idea of sharing e-teaching strategies, make it easier for people to look at other work and make it easy to get a sort of trial account and get up and going with LAMMs. So what we created was two new features a little while ago. One of them is called Lesson LAMMs. This is the sort of free version of LAMMs running on the internet, sort of like LAMMs in the cloud, if that you know, works for you. And then we created what we call an embed feature for LAMM sequences. And so those of you who know YouTube, where you can see a video on YouTube, there's this little bit where you can say, get the embed code. And if you copy that bit of code and put it into your blog or another web page, you effectively can get that video to then show up inside your web page. You can see most people are nodding. So we wanted to apply that embed idea to sharing teaching sequences. So that if I've got a sequence I think works in my teaching and I go and share it through the LAMMs community, there you could get some embed code so you could then put that in another website, maybe a blog or somewhere else, to share that with your colleagues and say, look, here's a sequence I've been using that you could have a look at that you could trial. So the idea here is not so much running it with students, that comes a bit later, but this is how do we make it easier for a teacher to share something they've built with other teachers so they could look at it. So that was one of the drivers behind this creation of this embed function, and then we combined it with Lesson LAMMs so that if you go to a sequence that's been embedded in a web page and you look at it and you think, I like the look of that, I wouldn't mind trying that myself, you could open it up immediately into this free version of LAMMs running on the internet and then explore it, play with it, and even launch it with students. So I say all of that because that's going to be at the heart of what I'm going to show you today, and much of the next part of the talk will actually just be live demonstrations of this in practice. But that's a quick screenshot of Lesson LAMMs, but I'll show it to you in a second. So let me just jump to the last bit of my content. So about the book. So this is a short book that I produced late last year, and I tried to capture in it three classic teaching approaches. Now, some of these may be quite familiar to you, some of them might be quite new. But predict, observe, explain is a particular way of teaching. It's very useful in science and engineering, where often we're dealing with experiments or with some kind of situation. We're trying to get people to think about what they think is going to happen, then they watch what happens, and then they try and work out why what really happened is different to what they might have thought. So I'll tell you about that one in a moment. Problem-based learning is very common in the medical area now as a way of teaching medicine, but is actually being adopted in many other areas. And at the heart of problem-based learning is instead of the lecturer standing up the front and just telling the students all the knowledge, what you do is you get students into teams, you give them a problem, normally some kind of real-world problem, and they work on it as a team, trying to understand what they know about that problem, but more importantly, what they don't know about that problem, and then go off and do some research to find out what they don't know. So it's a very active student process, that instead of me, the expert, just telling everyone, you know, what the knowledge is, the students work out what they know, what they don't know. They go off and, you know, go on the internet or go to the library, do some research, bring back the findings of their research to their group, and then sort of analyze those findings to try and use that to solve the problem. I've always loved the example of this that I first came across was at the University of Sydney, where I was many years ago, where they changed their entire medical school from a six-year, all-lectures, traditional approach to a four-year, entirely problem-based learning approach to teaching. And the very first day of the very first session, you're a brand-new medical student, you came in, you'd sit down in the room with about seven, eight other students, and the tutor who was there would say, you are a doctor in a local practice. A 51-year-old male walks into your office with a flushed face and complaining of chest pains. What should you do? And the students would be like, what do you mean, what should we do? Well, what should you do? And the students would very quickly say, we don't know what's, it's our first day, we don't know anything yet. And it's like, okay, that's the starting point. What do you need to know? Is the chest pain, could it be a heart attack? Could it be just indigestion? Is it that they've just been, you know, doing some exercise and they've strained a muscle? And so immediately the students have to start unpacking what they don't know to work out what they've got to go away and research to try and come back and then start answering the problem. So that's at the heart of the idea of problem-based learning, that you give students a problem which they unpack and they research. And then finally, role plays, which I'll mention in a moment. This is the idea that students get allocated to two or more different roles in some kind of situation. They go and research their role to understand what that role is all about. Then they come back and they have a discussion or a debate with the other students about that role. So an example that I'll use later on is, this is from a teacher training course. So imagine that there is a school which is considering getting interactive whiteboards, the, you know, whiteboards you can point on and so on. And some of the teachers are very much in favour of these whiteboards. They think they're very effective and useful for teaching. Others are quite concerned. They don't think they're very effective. They're a bit gimmicky and they don't think that they should be adopted. So the scenario is, should the school adopt more of these interactive whiteboards? And the students get allocated either to the role of those who think they're good and effective or to the role where they think they're not so good and effective. They go away and research as a group what they know in each of those roles. They then come back and have a big debate about what the school should do. And then at the end of that, they try and decide, you know, should they go ahead or not. And then the students then step out of their role and try and reflect on what they might have learned from being part of that. And the sort of the core purpose of a role play is to help students often to think about ideas that they might not think of themselves. So maybe if a student's very keen on technology, thinks all technology is great, they get allocated to the group which says that the whiteboards are not very good and not so good for education. Well, now they need to go away and research some of the arguments for why there are problems with whiteboards, why they might not use them. And so maybe articles or ideas that they wouldn't normally look at because they're biased the other way, they suddenly have to learn about. And not only that, when they come back, they have to argue the case from a point of view which is, in fact, not their normal point of view. And the experience of doing that, of as being a student, trying to present an argument, even when it might not be your own idea, tends to choose and make students think much more deeply. So I just mention these because these are three sort of well-established classic teaching techniques. There's quite some literature of theory behind them and so on. And each of these are known to be effective or potentially effective in, you know, certain teaching contexts. So what I did in the book, rather than talk in a lot of detail about all the theory behind it, I tried to start off by saying, what if you were going to consider using one of these in your teaching? What would you need to know to try it? What might go wrong? You know, how would you handle the things you need to know about? And if you're going to do it online, such as in LAMS, could I give you a template that would help you to get up and running? So that's the heart of today's talk. So I'm not going to rehearse everything in the book. That's something you can read later on. I just want to show you the final bit of that process mostly, the templates, and show you how you could use them in your own teaching. Okay. All right. So just a few brief words about predict, observe, explain before I jump into the real example. This, as I said, it's a teaching technique that's often popular in science contexts, and it's very good where you might have an experiment or some kind of situation where students assume that something's going to happen one way and it often goes a different way. And so what you do is you try and get them to predict what they think is going to happen and a few tasks around that, which I'll show you. They then observe what really happens, maybe watch a video or something. Then they try and explain why what they saw in the observation might be different from their own view. And why this is good is because if instead of using this technique, you just got up and told students, well, there's this experiment, this is what happens, so write that down in your notes. You know, that's what happens in the experiment. you haven't actively engaged the student in thinking for themselves. But more importantly, many students have these kind of hidden misconceptions in their mind about the way things work. So Predict, Observe, Explain tries to draw that out. It says, here's something that's about to happen. Now, you as a student, before I tell you what's going to happen, you predict what you think is going to happen. So the student has to think, well, based on my own ideas, I think this will happen. And then it even asks them to say, and how certain are you that that's what's going to happen? So then you go, how sure am I that I'm right? So you have to have a go at that. And so you do all this prediction before you then watch what happens and then try and explain it. So it activates the student mind. It activates any preconceptions they've got and, in many cases, any incorrect preconceptions they've got to then try and make for a much deeper learning experience. In some areas of psychology, we talk about this in terms of metacognition. It helps a student to reflect on their own thought processes and the fact that even though they were sure something was going to happen, it really didn't, something else happened, and why is it maybe that they were wrong? Why were they so sure they were going to be right? So it's a way of helping students to think about themselves. So let me jump out and show you a real example of this based on the book. So if I just go back to home, you'll see within the book there's a mention of this website, practicaleteachingstrategies.com. Don't worry about writing it down, it's in the book. But on this website, we've got these three teaching strategies and the templates for them that you can use. So let me go to Predict, Observe, Explain, and we'll have a look at this as an example. So here's our first sequence. And for each of the three strategies, there's one example that's got all the content in it that's, you know, teaching a particular topic. After that, there's then a sort of generic template where you could put in content that suits your topic area, you know, whatever area you teach. So this one is about dropping a hammer and a feather when you're on the moon and what happens when you drop them. Okay, so let's firstly go, and this is an example of the embed feature working on this website. So we put this sequence into the LAMS community, we got the embed code, and then we added it onto this website. And one of the things that the embed code allows you is to have a preview button where with a single click, I can jump straight into the learner version of this sequence. No accounts, no sign up, no passwords. I can just go straight in and see how it works. So let's click through this sequence and see how it's structured. Okay, so little intro. It's got a little picture there about the astronaut. It's a bit hard to see, but he's holding a hammer in this side and a feather in this side. That's a little introduction followed by the particular details of the topic. And this one's got a bit of video.
Well, in my left hand, I have a feather. In my right hand, a hammer. And I guess one of the reasons we got here today was because of a gentleman named Galileo a long time ago who made a rather significant discovery about falling objects in gravity fields. And we thought that where would be a better place to confirm his findings than on the moon. And so we thought we'd try it here for you. The feather happens to be appropriately a falcon feather for our falcon. And I'll drop the two of them here and hopefully...
Okay, so a little bit of it. Doesn't have to be video. Could have been some text. Could have been a picture. But that's sort of introduction to the scenario. Now, here comes the first part. So predict, observe, explain. They're the three phases of this strategy. There are three parts to the prediction step, then the observation, then the explanation. So the first part is we have to predict what's going to happen when the astronaut drops this. And in this case, we've got a couple of options to try and work out what we think is going to happen. Maybe I think they're going to both float upwards. Not going to be so good. And the system will then collate all the answers from all the different students and show them again. So students can see immediately a range of different views within it. So that's the first step. We've activated the student. They've had to take a guess or, you know, put forward an idea of what they think is going to happen. But it gets a bit deeper than that because the next step asks them, how committed are they to their prediction? How sure are you that what you just said is really going to happen? And so students might say, oh, I'm absolutely certain they're going to float up in the air, you know, whatever it might be. And so now we're going deeper than just the student having a guess, but we're actually trying to tap into any preconceptions they might have that make them sure they're right, you know, or not. Very powerful extra step. They then get to see again how, you know, certain their colleagues are and so on. And then finally, one more step, they have to try and give a reason for why they made their prediction. Okay, I think they're going to go up because there's no gravity on the moon. Submit that. And then, because this is the Q&A tool, if I was running this with a real class, as you know, you'd see all the different answers from the other students. So here, rather than just showing the students, here's the video of what the astronauts did, we've told them the setup and we've made them think, what do you think is going to happen? How certain are you that this is going to happen? And why do you think that? So it's a much deeper kind of reflective process the students have had to go through. All right, so that's the prediction stage with those three sub-steps. We then go to the observation phase. So this is when we show them what really happens. And we don't ask them to explain anything yet. We just say, tell us what you saw. What did you observe? You know, so being a good scientist, can you record your observations? So this one hasn't got any sounds, but you're able to see. Okay, let me just do that again. Of course, one of the great things about online video, you can... There we go. All right. So they hit the ground at the same time. I should point out that I think this is possibly the most expensive experiment ever done for educational purposes. I mean, if you think about it, we flew people to the moon to try and make... So you want a good learning design around that bit of video. It's because of billions of dollars getting that video. All right. So the point is then... students need to describe what has happened. And this is another important part of predict, observe, explain. You don't jump straight to the explanation. You're trying to get them, as good scientists, to just say, what did I see? I'll try and work out why that happened later, but what did I see? So, okay. And in case there's any doubts... again, by using Q&A, you would see all the other answers from your peers. And what's nice about that is if it's something a bit more complicated, some students may pick up some small feature that's important that other students will see there, even though they might not have thought to observe it carefully themselves. Finally, the explanation. So, done your prediction, you've done your observation, why do you think this happened? Now, in this case, I've set this up as a discussion forum within LAMS, which means that not only can the student just post a response, but they can talk with each other and debate what they've seen. People can offer corrections and so on. So, let's say. Okay, and then you can imagine the discussion going on. Now, something else to point out about this. How much work did the lecturer have to do to make that student experience happen? Well, apart from setting up the sequence, almost none at all. You know, it sort of runs itself as a teaching strategy. And I think one or two people were asking earlier, look, I've got classes of hundreds of students. You know, how do I use LAMS that doesn't mean I'm going to end up with, you know, many, many hours of work? Well, this is one of the things you can do. Try and structure the task so that it sort of does itself and the students themselves can comment if they get off track. As an instructor, you'd probably want to have a look at this forum just to see that there are not any outrageously wrong answers that everyone started agreeing with, and then you might post it, whoa, you know, got track. But it's unlikely. You know, there'll always normally be a few students who actually get what's going on and can offer thoughts for others. So... all right, if I stop that, so that was just to show you the preview of that particular teaching strategy. So let's say you're looking at it and you think, oh, that looks pretty interesting. I might be able to use that in my course. No, I'm not teaching gravity, but I could come up with something else that my students could do in this. So if we scroll down the page, what we've then got is the same sequence, but now set up as a template ready for you to be able to put your particular content, your discipline expertise, using this structure. And what I'm going to do now is click on this button, Open in Lesson LAMS. And what that's going to do is take a copy of that sequence and move it over to this free website and set it up so that you're ready to use it for yourself. So this is the website. If you've never been here before, you would just click Sign Up and type in a name and password, and it'll give you a free account just like that. Because I've already got an account, I'll just click Login. And so what it's done is it's logged me into my Lesson Lambs account. This is sort of this new version of Lambs running on the web, and we've done a few new things to make it look a little bit different, hopefully more attractive. But it's also sucked this sequence out of the Lambs community and given me my own private copy. So this is my own copy now of that sequence I found on this website that I can now use, edit, play with for my students. And so Lesson Lambs is a slightly different layout. You'll see it's got this preview button here to allow me to see how that works. There's the full author. So if you wanted to go into full author and look at changing the sequence around, maybe adding different tools or something, all of that is available to you here within the Lesson Lambs website. So there, so that's the sequence we were looking at before, but now ready for you to put in your material. So you could go and work on that and get it all set up. But I want to show you a new thing that we've added to this website that comes from our new work on what we call the Activity Planner. And this is a simplified editor for Lambs. And the idea is if all you wanted to edit was the content, not the sequence or the structure, what if we could give you just a simple view where you just edit, you know, what's the question or what's the topic without editing everything else? So this is what we've done. We've created this new type of editor where all it does is it has the sequence sort of running down the page, and whatever the key bit of content from each tool is in just one box. So editing the sequence is all on just one page. If I just scroll down quickly, you'll see. So there's the first notice board. There's those voting tasks for the prediction and the commitment. There's the question answer for the rationale, the final notebook, and then the forum. So the editing of this sequence can all be done on one page. The next thing we've done is then said, all right, can we write the instructions for the tasks in a sort of generic way that would work no matter what your predict, observe, explain was, you know, whether you're doing it, gravity or, you know, climate change or something else. And so where the text is in normal colour, that's text that you could just leave and you don't have to edit at the moment. You know, you could just use that as it is. But where you see some yellow colour, those are the bits that you need to edit to make it into your particular topic. So if I was thinking of maybe, I don't know, a climate change example, and I was trying to get people to think about what would happen if, carbon kept going up in the atmosphere, what would they predict of the problems, then I would put in here, into this first bit, you know, my example. Okay, so imagine carbon keeps increasing. What do you predict is the first big problem we will face? So that could be my question. Notice also down here this little button, editing advice. This is a new little feature that we've added. So it normally pops up with just a little bit of advice about how to do the editing for this bit of text. So suggestions, sort of, here's a good way to word a question, or here's the sort of information you should put in there. So it's sort of like little contextual advice to a teacher about how to use it. Okay, I'm not going to fill out this whole thing for you, but I just want to sort of point out that as we go down, there's certain bits that need filling out. There we are. So for the predictions, remember, they've got to predict what they think's going to happen. You need to give them certain predictions to choose from to then see which ones they predict right or wrong. So in carbon change, if it had been climate change for carbon, maybe it could have been that the sea levels will rise, that we'll have more storms and monsoons, you know, that people will start to have trouble breathing. So they're all possible, but which of them's going to be the first thing that causes real trouble? You know, well, that could be the focus of it. And then down here, the observation, this is one of the key bits. So that's where you would give them, be it a video or it could be a story or a narrative that, you know, then tells them what's actually going to happen. In the case of climate change, the biggest problem we will hit first is around changing weather patterns. So more monsoons, more fires. Rising sea levels, difficulty breathing, they're actually quite a way further out. But more violent weather we're already starting to see in our world, you know, today. So that would be, in this case, the thing you could talk about there. And then finally, there's the discussion bit at the end. So I just wanted to show you that as a new way of thinking about editing, where we're not asking a teacher to know everything about building something from scratch. We're saying, here's a well-established teaching technique that's known to be effective. You just fill in the content to suit the topic that you want to teach. From there, you can also go into preview. And in Lesson Lambs, it's got a special option where you can run it with a group of up to 30 students. So again, this doesn't really matter if you've got your own big version of Lambs at, you know, SP or NTU and so on. But if you're working in a school, perhaps, and you want to be able to just do a trial with a single class, you can do that with up to 30 students. Okay. So the goal of this new area of work that we've been looking at is to try and say, can we capture a good teaching approach, which has got a kind of structure to it, a known way of working? Can we then provide it in a sort of template format so you could add to it your particular topic area, and then make all that process as quick or as easy as we can so that you're not asking every teacher to be an expert in pedagogy and to think up the whole structure? Instead, people who are experts in pedagogy, and many of you are in this room, you can build your own versions of these to suit your, you know, colleagues or your staff, but then be able to use them when you work with other teachers to help them fill in the information. And I think for many lecturers, they find it much easier to fill in their content expertise and be sort of happier to go with some pre-built teaching approach. So if you came to them and said, look, I'd like you to tell me what's a classic experiment in your field where students, when they predict what they think is going to happen, almost always get it wrong because of some interesting surprise. Now, my experience is for many scientists, they're like, oh, yeah, there's the, you know, that comes very easily for them. So you'd be saying, all right, well, can we use that now to fill in this teaching approach of predict, observe, explain? And I want finally to just point out that if you do this with students, when you get to the end of this process, one of the things that a lecturer might say, well, okay, doing that took maybe half an hour, you know, of student time, maybe even an hour's worth of student time. I could have just told them the answer in 3 minutes or 5 minutes. Why go to all this trouble? Well, the real answer is that the students are more deeply engaged with the question. They are far more likely to remember the answer to this than if they just wrote it down in their notes and that was the last thing that, you know, just went straight in one ear and out the other. But even more importantly, if we think of it as a science example, it could be that students have wrong theories, wrong conceptions about the way the world works, and just having you tell them the answer will just bounce straight off that. But making them predict what they think is going to happen, making them say how sure they are of that, and then explain why, you've engaged them much more deeply. And so, yes, the lecturer could have just told the answer in 5 minutes, whereas this might take, say, half an hour to do. But the value of that half-hour learning, I would say, is far deeper, far more effective than the just handing out the knowledge in the lecture. So that's, and you don't want to do that all the time. There is a good place for lectures, and there's certain kind of knowledge which are well taught there. But if you think of an example where students are particularly prone to misunderstanding or misconceptions, where this is suitable, it can be a much more effective, a much deeper kind of teaching technique. So that's predict, observe, explain. The other two I'll just go through very briefly. I don't want to go through all the detail of it and the materials in the book. But let me just point out the overall structure for them. All right. So for problem-based learning, this is the sequence for problem-based learning. And it starts off with some kind of general introduction. There you go. General introduction and the problem. So if this was you were building your own one, that's one of the key bits you would fill in. What is your problem for your topic that you teach? Then you have a series of steps where students try and understand what do they know about the problem already, what can they share with each other that they know, and what can they then work out that they don't know that they need to go away and research. So in LAMS, what it is, students get a notebook where they just write some private thoughts for themselves about what they've learned. Then they try and describe what they think the problem's about, and that's a Q&A, so all the answers are shared with their group. And then they've got a discussion forum, and they've got two jobs in the discussion forum. Firstly, to discuss the problem and see what they can make of it and understand it, but then also to plan a research phase where they go away and do research on this problem. So this is a teaching strategy that would normally run over at least a week, maybe 2 weeks, you know, if you were doing it asynchronously. It's not something you do in 5 or 10 minutes. But this phase might be maybe an hour or so worth of student time getting prepared. This research phase is when they would then go off and do some research. They might do that over several days or, you know, even a week, and they're trying to find different information that will help them solve the problem. And in a really good problem-based learning example, what you're hoping for is a problem that is sufficiently complex that different students could research different topics. So if we go back to the example of the man I gave who comes to the doctor with the, you know, the chest pain, if it's a heart problem, then you've got to work out how would you work out that this is a heart problem as compared to something else. So one student or a pair of students could go away and research heart problems. Another student might need to go and look at indigestion and whether it's a stomach problem that's causing the pain. So they go off and look at that. Another one might look at it, is it a muscle problem from doing too much exercise? So they go off and look at muscles. And so the idea is that different students could actually research different topics, bring back what they've learned, and in this second discussion, share, you know, the things from the group that they've found out from research. And then again, there's a second task. So having shared what they learned from research, then discuss, you know, how do they try and solve the problem using all this information. And it's worth saying that this particular problem-based learning is probably the simple version of it, where you just have one research phase and discussion. But in some cases, it's, you actually have two research phases. And so what you would do is you'd have some research, some discussion, and then the students here would work out, what do we still not know? You know, even though we went off and did some research and we've come back and we've talked about it, but we still don't know how to solve the problem. So what other research have we got to go and do and then come back and talk again? So you sometimes actually repeat that step a second time before at the end you come to what is the solution to the problem, and using Q&A so that each student has to try and write out what they think their solution to the problem is. You can provide then some feedback on the problem. So this is, again, the bit where you do editing as the teacher. So you then provide, okay, here's what really happened. Here's some advice. Here's how you could have tested or known more about what's going on. And you could have a final discussion for any follow-up after you've given them the information on the topic. So again, when you come to use this template, a lot of this can be done no matter what your topic is. The only bits that you have to edit as a teacher particularly are the initial description of the problem and the feedback on it at the end. All of this can be actually written in a way that applies to almost any topic. You know, now go and do some research, now think about your problem. So if you look at them, you'll see that that's how the text has been constructed. And so again, down the bottom, that's the template version. And so if you open that up in Lesson Labs, there'll be the little bits of yellow text where it says, this is the bit you need to fill out. All right, last one for today, and then I'll wrap up. Role play. So role play is quite a sophisticated teaching technique. It's something that I would say needs quite some preparation for get ready for it. I wouldn't do it if you were a novice teacher or a novice LAMS user. But it is a very powerful technique where you want to try and get students to think from someone else's point of view. Because the idea of a role play is you set up some kind of scenario. I gave the example of the interactive whiteboards one before. Students then get allocated to a particular role. It could be that they're in favour of whiteboards or against whiteboards. And then they go and research that and talk about it with their peers. They then come back and have the role play. So just to show you how this one works, these first four steps are all of the background and introduction to the role play. So what's the general overview? What is the scenario? So that's the bit that you would write about your particular topic. The structure of the tasks, and then telling the students about their role groups. And in this version, it's essentially a kind of pro versus con, or in favour versus against, which is sort of the simplest kind of role play. In some other examples, I've done it where you have more roles and it's more complicated. So the school I described where they're thinking about interactive whiteboards, there's a different version of this role play on the LAMS community where there's four roles. The teachers who are in favour, the teachers who are against, school management, the principal or you know, others, and students. And so when they come to have the debate about what should be done, instead of just having pro and con arguing backwards and forwards, it's a much more complex discussion of what do the students think of the whiteboards, what do the principal think. So that's a more complex example if you're interested. For this one, I've done it simply so that the students just get split randomly into one of the two roles. They then go off and do some reflection and discussion just within their role group. So if you got assigned to the group who are anti the whiteboards, you didn't think they were very effective, then you and the other students in that group would go off together to sort of prepare your arguments and think about what it is you'd like to do. If you had, say, a group of 20 or 30 students, then you know 10, 15 would go off one way, 10, 15 would go off the other way. And this is a phase that would normally take perhaps maybe an hour if you're doing it together in the computer lab, or I would do it for at least a week normally if I was doing it as an asynchronous activity. But after whatever period of time, there's a stop point that you would release as the teacher running this, and then there's a forum where everyone comes together and now everyone debates what should be done in the scenario. So the teachers who are in favour, the teachers who are against, they all start making their arguments and they see where that goes. And typically everyone starts off with a few initial arguments and then different sort of ideas head off in different directions and students can post their answers. That bit I'd suggest normally would go for a week if you're doing it asynchronously. It can go for 2 weeks if you're you want to have a nice long discussion. And when I run this with my own students, I actually say to them, you have to come back and read and post a message once per day. And the reason for that is that if they don't do that, they tend to not say very much and you don't get a good discussion going. Whereas if you say to them, you've got to make some contribution each day, it leads to a good discussion. And it might sound a bit, you know, you're telling your students what they have to do, but after the first few days, normally the debate gets so interesting and sometimes so heated that they'll want to come back and, you know, keep making their points anyway. So after they've done, that's the main role play, or the role play proper as it's called. At the end of that, then there's another stop point. And in this final bit, you ask students to then step back out of their role. So whatever role they're in, stop, step back to themselves, and now reflect on what do they think about this topic. You know, they may have been arguing an idea that's quite different to their personal point of view. So now they reflect, have they learned something new? You know, did they see a perspective that they normally wouldn't see for themselves? And so we ask students in this one to try and vote on what do they think should be done personally, having reflected on it. They write in a private journal what they think they learned. And there's a final Q&A where they sort of share with each other what was surprising or interesting about the role play experience. You know, what happened that they didn't expect? Did their own views change, or were they surprised by ideas they hadn't heard before? So that's a role play sequence. The major things that you need to edit for this one is this one, the scenario. So what is the situation that you're setting up where students need to debate? So I gave an example yesterday of you could have, if it was climate change again, maybe introducing a carbon tax. That could be the scenario. And you've got people who are in favour of a carbon tax, who think that's a really good idea, and people who are against it, who think it's not a good solution or not going to help. So if you had that as your initial scenario, students get broken up into people in favour of carbon tax or against it. They go away and reflect on that individually. They then come together and they have a big debate about the pros and cons of having a carbon tax. And then at the end, they vote on their personal view and they reflect on what they've learned from being part of that scenario. So again, depends on the areas that you teach, but there may be topics where there is some value in having students try and think about the topic or the area from a different perspective. And so role play is a great teaching strategy for that purpose. Now, I should say that all three of these teaching techniques have got a rich theoretical literature behind them. You can read many articles that, you know, go on for great detail, and I've given some of those in the references section in further reading at the back of each chapter. So if you want to learn more about problem-based learning and its theory, by all means, do it. But the focus of the book is more on the idea of, if you're willing to give one of these a try, what would be the practical things you need to know? So each chapter starts with a little story about what it's like to teach this. What are some of the background issues? It then talks about when you run it online, what are the special issues of doing it online as opposed to face-to-face? And then the final bit of the chapter is how to use this template to then prepare it for your own teaching. So my hope is, and this is a new thing for us, we still don't know, but my hope is that this will introduce these new teaching techniques in a way that would be easier to get up and running than if you had to build the whole thing yourself and you had to research all of it. But I suppose the final thing I'd say on this, if I just jump back to my final slide. That I've tried to create these teaching strategies so many different topics could use them, whether you teach, you know, software development or, you know, engineering for the climate or, you know, building cars, whatever it is that you work on. Hopefully there will be some topics where you think, oh yeah, that area of the course, I always have trouble on teaching that. Maybe predict, observe, explain would be worth trying there, or maybe problem-based learning. So I'm not suggesting you'd use this for everything in your course, but, you know, if it was sort of something a bit different from the usual, hopefully that's useful. But the final thing I'd say about these teaching strategies is don't assume, if you do go and use one, which I would encourage you to try, don't assume that everything will go perfectly the first time and everything will be, you know, wonderful. It might be, you never know. I mean, some colleagues, even just seeing the answers to your students on a Q&A and what they really think can be, you know, so extraordinary that is motivating in its own right. So you might have that experience. But even if bits of it don't work as expected, many people who've tried these have found that trying this is the beginning of a process. Where having done it once, you learn, oh, okay, so the students were really interested in that topic. Maybe I should focus it more on that particular topic instead of the original topic I gave them. So I think about the use of these kind of templates as sort of a cycle. So you would think of a topic that might suit one of these templates, fill it out, try it with your students, and then after trying it, look at their responses, talk to them about what worked, what didn't. And then think, right, well, next time I use this or next semester or in another area, how would I use it a little bit differently? And so I think if you come at these teaching strategies, don't see them as sort of a perfect solution to all problems. That's not what I'm suggesting. But as the beginning of a process of trying out something a bit new, a bit different, then I think hopefully you'll find that useful in your teaching. So that's all I have for today. So we'll finish there. Chuntek, do you have anything to share with us?
Okay, I think thanks.